We're in Exodus chapter number 4, verse number 27 as we begin today. And Moses has been commissioned by God at Mount Sinai to go to Egypt and become God's prophet to the Israeli people first, but also to the Egyptian people. Moses left Mount Sinai and the burning bush incident and went back home to whatever town in Midian he lived in with his family and his father-in-law, Reuel, or the Jethro, the priest of Midian, to collect his wife and his boys to make the trip to Egypt. Now, it would appear, and this is where I'm going to give you some of the geographical markers that have to match the scripture here. It would appear that wherever Mount Sinai is, and I believe it's in southern Jordan somewhere, the town or the place where Moses and his family lived had to have been east from there. We'll see that in just a moment. So Moses traveled east from Mount Sinai, got his family, started traveling west so that he could join the road that goes across the northern Sinai Peninsula to Egypt itself and be in Egypt in like maybe 10 days or so. And in that first day or two of his trip, Moses is stricken by God, unable to do anything. He's sick, and it's clear that he's sick because his most recent son hasn't been circumcised. And Zipporah is forced by God, by this situation, to circumcise the baby or young man. And she is ticked, and she throws the foreskin at Moses' feet and says, "You are a bloody bridegroom." And I told you that the indication is that she packed the boys up and they went back home to Dad. Because the next time we see them, Dad will be bringing them from their town or their place of domicile to Mount Sinai to be with Moses. So they go home. And so Moses is by himself continuing the journey. But he is quickly joined by his brother at Mount Sinai. So that's how we know that Mount Sinai is on the road from the home in Midian toward Egypt. So verse 27 of Exodus 4 says, "He who is said to Aaron, go into the wilderness to meet Moses." So now we've got the flashback again, that at just the right moment, God told Aaron to leave Egypt and head off toward Midian, and specifically to go to a mountain. So he went, and he met him at the mountain of God, and he kissed him. So they come from opposite directions. Moses from the east, Aaron from the west, and they meet together at Mount Sinai. And, of course, it's the first time they've seen each other in 40 years, so it's quite the reunion. Now, Moses told Aaron all the words of He Who Is with which he had sent him to speak, and all the signs that he had commanded him to do. So Moses brings Aaron up to speed, including how this is all going to function, that Moses is going to be God's prophet, but Aaron is going to be the prophet's mouthpiece. Aaron's going to do the bulk of the talking. Verse 29. Then Moses and Aaron went and gathered together all the elders of the people of Israel. So now after, you know, we'll just throw out 10 days there again. After 10 days of travel, they end up in Egypt and they make arrangements for, I believe, the 70 elders of Israel to come together. Now, what's the deal with that number 70? Well, remember that 70 is attached to how many went into Egypt of the family of Jacob. And so it kind of becomes a governing number. And so there were 70 members of the Sanhedrin later. And that may go back a very long way. I think it might actually go all the way back here. But all of these elders are gathered together. And verse 30, Aaron spoke all the words that he who is had spoken to Moses and did the signs in the sight of the people. So Aaron's doing the talking, and Moses is apparently doing the acting of the signs. So he throws the stick down, and it turns into a cobra, and that scares him. And then he picks it back up, and they do some more talking. But apparently they weren't quite on board yet. So through Aaron, Moses has them all put their hands into their clothing, and they pull them out. And they're leprous. They're white as snow. And then he has them put them back in and pull them back out. And they're good. They're fine. So a second sign. At some point, they believed. Now, did it take the water turn to blood? I don't know. But in verse 31, it says, and the people believed. And when they heard that he who is had visited the people of Israel and that he had seen their affliction, they bowed their heads and they worshiped. So the leadership is on board right now. And any of the people that were in the area nearby that happened to see these things, they're on board right now. And the news starts spreading. God is getting us out of here. And then comes the confrontation with Pharaoh. So this has to happen at the capital city, which at this time would have been just a little south of the Delta region, somewhere in the region of where Cairo is today. And so afterward, chapter 5, afterward, Moses and Aaron went and said to Pharaoh, Now, use your imagination to picture Moses having Aaron do all the talking, okay? Thus says he who is. Now, remember, he would have used the Hebrew name, Yahweh. The God of Israel, let my people go that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness. Now remember, that was going to be the first ask. Let the people go, 3 days travel, worship, and then presumably they could come back 3 days later. And God already knows that Pharaoh is not going to accept that deal. And so Pharaoh said, who is Yahweh that I should obey his voice and let Israel go? I don't know Yahweh. Moreover, I'm not going to let Israel go. Now, this now makes a lot more sense, doesn't it? That Pharaoh is like, who are you talking about? Remember, Moses had said, what if the Israelis ask me, what's the name of God? What am I supposed to tell them? Because there's just so many gods out there with lots and lots of different names. Well, that's definitely going to have the same impact on the Egyptian. He knows an awful lot of gods by their names, and he knows no Yahweh. He's never heard this name before. So, I don't know who you're talking about. Besides which, why would I let my slave force go? Why? Verse 3, then they said, the God of the Hebrews has met with us. Please let us go 3 days' journey into the wilderness that we may sacrifice to he who is our God, lest he fall upon us with pestilence or with the sword. So now they try to appeal to his religious mind. Like, we're serious. God appeared to us. His name is Yahweh. He wants us to come out into the wilderness for, you know, 3 days' journey to worship him. If we don't, we risk the wrath of God. So, work with us here. Certainly, you wouldn't want the wrath of your God to fall on you. Verse 4, but the king of Egypt said to them, Moses and Aaron, why do you take the people away from their work? Get back to your burdens. And that would have been spoken to the elders. Because remember, the elders are there. You all get back to work. Question might arise. How come Aaron doesn't get treated like he's a slave in all of this? And what about Moses? You know, why isn't he treated like an escaped slave? And I think the answer is related to the fact that Moses had been adopted into a royal family. He and Thutmose the third are relatives of the sort. They are from the same royal family. They don't share the same bloodline, but they do share the same legal standing as royalty of Egypt. My conviction is that when Moses was adopted by Pharaoh's daughter, Moses' family, his biological family, who served Pharaoh's daughter in taking care of Moses when he was a baby, I think that family was probably granted special status in the royal family circle. And so they ceased being workaday slaves and became much more like freedmen, perhaps, where they are no longer slaves in reality, but rather trusted servants. And so that's what Aaron would have probably grown up with. And he'd grown up for 40 years with that status. And then when Moses ran off, he spent another 40 years in that status. All right, so the ones that are being told to get back to work here are those elders and any other people of Israel that are kind of hanging out, listening to how this is going. Then Pharaoh said, behold, the people of the land are now many, and you make them rest from their burdens. So you are taking the people away from the work they're supposed to be doing. And then he gets kind of mean. He's reactive. Verse 6, the same day Pharaoh commanded the taskmasters of the people and their foremen, you shall no longer give the people straw to make bricks as in the past. Let them go and gather straw for themselves. But the number of bricks that they made in the past, you shall still impose on them. They shall by no means reduce it, for they are idle. Therefore they cry, let us go and offer sacrifice to our gods. Let heavier work be laid on the men that they may labor at it and pay no regard to lying words. So Pharaoh's order is, from now on, don't provide the material that holds the clay together for the bricks that these guys are making. And clay brick making is an art. I mean, they have all these forms out there, and they can mass produce lots and lots of bricks, and they've got places where they can either sun dry them or kilns that they can put them in to bake them nice and hard. But you've got to have stubble, some sort of material that holds the clay together in the curing process. And so usually that had been provided to the brick makers. But now Pharaoh says, no, they got too much time on their hands. If they want to take a week off to go and worship their God out in the middle of nowhere, they got too much time on their hands. Let them go out and collect that stuff. Let them go out there and get that straw from the harvest time. And so that's exactly what they did. The taskmasters and the foremen of the people went out and they said to the people, "Thus says Pharaoh, I will not give you straw. Go get your straw yourselves wherever you can find it, but your work will not be reduced in the least." So still have to have the exact same quota of bricks. So the people were scattered throughout all the land of Egypt to gather stubble for straw. So now we've got work parties, search parties that are spun off from the brick-making groups. And they're like traveling everywhere as fast as they can go, trying to collect up all this straw from the harvest fields and get it back. And everybody is working furiously to get bricks made with this material that's coming in from far off. They're not making their quota, and that's a problem. The taskmasters were urgent. Complete your work. Your daily task each day is when there was straw. And the foremen of the people of Israel, whom Pharaoh's taskmasters had set over them, were beaten and were asked, "Why have you not done all your task of making bricks today and yesterday is in the past?" So apparently the foremen are Israelis that are in charge of Israeli work crews. The taskmasters are pure blood Egyptians. And so the Egyptian taskmasters are beating the Jewish foreman, saying, "Why aren't you making your quota?" Now the foreman tries to explain. Foreman of the people of Israel came and cried to Pharaoh, "Why are you treating your servants like this? No straw's given to your servants, yet they say to us, 'Make bricks,' and behold, your servants are beaten, but the fault is your own people." So the foreman run off to Pharaoh, thinking maybe he doesn't know about this abuse, because it's so unreasonable, and it really is, isn't it? To expect the same quota to be made when you've added a whole new search for the material dimension to the process. But Pharaoh doesn't care. Verse 17, "But he said, 'You are idle.'" You're idle. That's why you say, "Let us go and sacrifice to he who is. Go now, work. No straw is going to be given to you. You're still going to deliver the same number of bricks." And so the foremen of the people of Israel saw that they were in trouble when they said, "You shall by no means reduce your number of bricks, your daily tasks each day." And so the foremen met Moses and Aaron, who were waiting for them as they came out from Pharaoh. So the Moses and Aaron are, however it was arranged in the palace grounds, they're near the exit point for the audience hall. And out come the foremen who thought they were going to get some relief from this unjustifiable demand of keeping the quota the same. And they don't. They don't get their demand. And they come out and there's Moses and Aaron waiting. And what did they say? Verse 21, "The foreman said to Moses and Aaron, 'He who is, look on you and judge, because you have made a stink in the sight of Pharaoh and his servants. You put a sword in their hand to kill us.'" So this is the first time that the Israelis have a negative attitude toward Moses and Aaron, because now they feel that it is Moses and Aaron's fault that their life is even worse now than it was before Moses and Aaron arrived. Which, you know, being a slave, having to work 7 days a week, as long as the sun is up, that sort of lifestyle, that's not fun. Being beaten when you're not doing things the way you're supposed to, or just beaten because the taskmasters don't like you, that's not fun. But now it's even worse. And these guys blame Moses and Aaron for it. And Moses is upset himself about how this has backfired. Verse 22, then Moses turned to He Who Is and said, "Oh, my master, why have you done evil to this people?" Now, remember that the word evil is not always carrying the notion of morality. The word literally has to do with rottenness or stench or corruption. So bad stuff. I mean, really bad stuff. So why have you done this bad stuff to your people? Why did you ever send me? So this is that sort of thing of Moses saying, I knew I didn't want to be involved in this. For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people, and you have not delivered your people at all. So Moses is also very upset because it's not going according to what he thought the plan was, which is interesting because God already told him that the plan was going to involve judgment, the hardening of Pharaoh's heart. Moses, for some reason, got it in his head and apparently communicated this sense to the leadership that God was just going to do miracles and march them right out, and it would be wonderful. But it's not. It's going to be a tough time. Chapter number 6. But He Who Is said back to Moses, now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh, for with a strong hand he will send them out, and with a strong hand he will drive them out of his land. So God tells Moses, listen, when it happens, Pharaoh is going to force you guys out, want you out so badly because of the things that are happening to him and his people and his gods, because of my judgment against them. God continued speaking to Moses. He said to him, I am He Who Is. So remember, from here on out, God uses his own name for the Israelites on a regular basis. And I'm going to say the translation in English of that name. I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, as El Shaddai, as God Almighty. In the book of Genesis, Abraham and the patriarchs typically knew God as either God Most High, El Elyon, or El Shaddai, God Almighty, or possibly, and I shared this with you, God of my chest, my God, my personal God. But, God says, but by my name, He Who Is, I did not make myself known to them. So this is all new. I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land in which they lived as sojourners. So God is reminding them, this was the promise I made to the forefathers, to the patriarchs and the matriarchs. And now it's time to fulfill my promise. Verse 5, moreover, I have heard the groaning of the people of Israel, whom the Egyptians hold as slaves, and I have remembered my covenant, my promise. Say therefore to the people of Israel, I am He Who Is, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from slavery to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great acts of judgment. So God is just reminding them, these are the things I've promised to do, these are the things I will do. I will take you to be my people, and I will be your God. And you shall know that I am he who is your God, who brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. So he is going to be known to them personally as the God that brought them out of Egypt. And that will be a title of God throughout Jewish history. Verse 8, I will bring you into the land that I swore to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to you for possession. I am he who is. So God says, by my name, the one who was, is, and will always be, by my name, I guarantee you, I will keep all of my promises. You will get out of Egypt amidst a lot of supernatural stuff, and I will take you into the promised land. Trust me, is basically what God is saying. And so Moses, through Aaron, remind you, spoke thus to the people of Israel. So God gives this message of promise to Moses. Moses then goes to the people and speaks this promise through Aaron to the people. But they did not listen to Moses because of their broken spirit and harsh slavery. They are now despondent even more than they were before. They do not believe that Moses will be able to do what he said he was going to do when he first showed up, and that was to take them out of slavery. And so they are depressed. And now it comes time for God to keep his promises. Mark your place. Come back into the Word next time.